evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, June 14, 2016. South Sudan's High Court sentences 16 former employees in President Kiir's office for stealing money.
What the judge has said, and if you compare forging the president's signature and stealing such a huge amount of money, I think it's fair, it's fair.
And South Sudanese rapper is using his music to criticize the government.
I just have to be myself. I can't change for any intimidation or any fear, because you only live once, and I cannot live like a coward.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A high court in Juba has sentenced 16 former employees in President Salva Kiir's office to life in prison after they were found guilty of stealing more than $14 million from the president's office. Mr. Kiir's spokesman, Ateny Wekateny, welcomes the verdict. Mungume Davis Rakarinj reports for VOA from Juba.
Defense lawyer Bech Pitia labeled the judgment as unfortunate and unfair. Bech says justice is at the mercy of politicians.
We believe that the case is purely politicized. It's purely politicized in every aspect of it. During the course of trial, we as the defense panel, we are not given the right to represent our clients duly. And the judge keeps on interrupting the proceedings to the extent which took us to this drama. I call it a drama because due process of law was not followed.
PTA says the defense team will appeal the sentences within the next 15 days. Defense lawyer Agok Makor says the defense team will customize the appeals pertaining to each of the 16 former employees.
We are going to write the application to the Court of Appeal about this offense. You imagine, you cannot doing for all 16, because they are not doing one offense. They are different in offense.
Presidential spokesman Ateny Wekateny insists the court performed its duty without favor.
It is twofold. One is that for the first time in the history of South Sudan, particularly after the independence, for a court in South Sudan to sentence senior officials, you know, in the case of theft and corruption. Number two, it is also on the other side for the families and the convicted men and women to also put South Sudan into another test, whether the highest court, you know, is also capable of looking at the grievances of those convicted.
Last year, President Kiir dismissed the officials, including the then executive director, Mayen Wor, and chief administrator, Yael Wor. They were fired a month after national security officer, John Agar Wor, was arrested on alleged fraud charges over the missing money. The accused are also said to have forged President Kiir's signature and used the presidential seal to steal 30 million South Sudanese pounds from the Bank of South Sudan. Following yesterday's court session, a lawyer who did not want to be identified by name because of the sensitivity of the matter and fear of retribution said there were some inconsistencies with the application of the law. But he says the state was doing the right thing, setting a precedent, demonstrating that anyone who steals money from the government, even those close to the president, will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
I'm happy that justice has prevailed and justice has been done. And people are seeing really justice has been done. And that's one of the principles of the law. I think what the judge has said, and if you compare forging the president's signature and stealing such a huge amount of money, I think it's fair. It's fair.
South Sudan's Penal Code of 2008 provides for a maximum sentence of 7 years in prison for anyone convicted on charges of theft. Ateny insists the judge followed sentencing guidelines and was not threatened or intimidated by the president.
I am not aware of a particular, intimidation. I think Judge Armeno was not intimidated. But as I told you, that the law only accepts what it can be proven.
Ateny says the convicted former officials will be allowed to appeal the sentences. But if those appeals fail, the 16 will remain in prison. Two Australian citizens are among the 16 employees who were sentenced to life in prison. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
The United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, and Save the Children say they have reunited at least 4,000 children with their families after being separated during the two-year conflict. Nabil Biagio has this report for VOA from Juba.
That 7-year-old Nyabito, she's among the 4,000 South Sudanese children to be reunited with their family. Nyabito was flown safely on Saturday from Juba to her grandmother in their village of Kodok, which is located on the western bank of the White Nile in former Upper Nile State. UNICEF officials say she was among more than 12,000 children separated from their families by the conflict, which erupted in December 2013. Nyabito lost her mother when the town of Malakal came under heavy fighting between government forces and former rebels loyal to the first Vice President Riek Machar in December 2014. She was put on a United Nations plane headed to Juba. Nyapat Ijiandeng is Nyabito's grandmother. Speaking by phone from Kodok, Ijiandeng says after she lost her daughter, she received the good news that her granddaughter had survived the attack and that she was flown to Juba. Speaking Arabic, she says that's when she began her search for Nyabito. Ijiandeng says, I heard that there was an organization that was working on tracing kids that had been separated from their mothers. Then I went over there and talked to them about Nyabito and her three other cousins that went missing during the attack on Malakal. She says, I told them that I heard they were in Juba, but I didn't know how they got there. Ijiandeng contacted the Office of Widows and Orphans Charitable Organization in Kodok, and she was connected to Save the Children and other agencies working to find missing children. But it was not until last Saturday, about 8 months after she contacted Save the Children, that she was told her granddaughter was alive and on her way back home. She says she couldn't believe her eyes when she saw Nyabito. Ijiandeng says, I couldn't believe that they were standing in front of me when they got off the plane. I thought I would never see Nyabito again, that she was dead. Ijiandeng says her daughter was sick when she arrived and had to be taken to the hospital. She says she has many questions about how Nyabito was living when she was away, but for now she's just glad to have her grandchild back home. UNICEF representative Tim Irwin says reuniting 4,000 children with their families is a remarkable and encouraging achievement.
This is an important milestone, but it's a point in the process, and we need to continue doing the work so that all of those children who have been separated are returned to their families.
UNICEF and Save the Children have been working to trace children like Nyabito and her cousins to reunite them with their families. The program is called Family Tracing and Reunification System. Irwin says the system is a complex process that involves several steps. It starts with finding a separated child and asking them whether they have family or relative nearby or whether they know the name of their hometown.
And then it's about, you know, putting people on the ground and sometimes going door to door. So they may say that they're from Malakal, for example, and the neighborhood in Malakal. And so then people go out and they talk to people in that community and they say, have you heard of this child? Does anyone know about this child? And it really is a kind of door-to-door, word-of-mouth process that is very labor-intensive and takes a long time.
Save the Children's Country Director in South Sudan, Peter Walsh, says there is also a follow-up process when children are reunited with their families to make sure they can adjust and overcome the trauma caused by the separation and the often unexpected reunification.
So we try and provide some sort of family psychosocial support if we're able to, although this is a really underfunded sector. We are able to provide them with some basic utensils, some NFI non-food items, and then we encourage them to get the child into school as early as possible, obviously reintegrating into the community.
UNICEF and Save the Children say they urgently need more funding to be able to continue carrying out their work. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Still on matters to do with children, the Catholic Diocese in Wau has opened a new children's hospital. Church and health officials in Wau say the facility has the capacity to admit hundreds of patients. The facility has 15 wards, each containing 10 beds. As Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Wau, the $3 million project took nearly 2 years to complete.
Hundreds of residents turned out for yesterday's ribbon cut-on ceremony to open the St. Mary's Health Maternal and Child-Friendly Hospital in Alel Chok, located about 5 kilometers outside Wau. The two-story hospital hosts a training center for nurses, where dozens of nursing students are attending lessons. Speaking in Arabic, Wau resident Jospina Luca says the facility built by the Don Bosco nuns will enable women to safely deliver their babies.
I would like to thank the nun for making for us the hospital near here and provides doctors to help treat our children. I also thank our chief for giving out the land for the construction of the hospital. I used to seek treatment at Komboni and Sika Hadid hospitals, but now this one is near.
Another resident, Arcangelo Marco, thanked the Catholic Church for building the hospital. Speaking in Arabic, Marco says the new hospital will help vulnerable groups.
Now that we have a hospital nearby, it will help us very much. We have elderly residents, blind and lame people who cannot walk long distance to get treatment. They will access it closer to their homes.
Director for St. Mary's Hospital, Sister Gracie Adichereng, says the facility will serve thousands of mothers and children.
This is a hospital going to be 150 bedded. Though the inpatient facilities are not yet ready, the outpatient department will start working tomorrow onwards. The hospital is named Mary Help Maternal and Child Friendly Hospital. We will be caring for the mothers, pregnant mothers, lactating mothers, and the children under 12 years old. In emergency situation, we care also for the men and women. In future, we will have inpatient department and surgical department and operation theater.
Sister Adichereng says the hospital also plans to build a surgical theater and carry out surgical operations. She says the Catholic Church in South Sudan will continue to not only evangelize, but also provide services, including health care, to citizens.
We pray that God may send many more generous and helpful people to accomplish and complete this hospital, the dream where thousands and thousands of mothers will have good health.
The governor of Wau State, Elias Waya Nyipoch, who presided over the ribbon-cutting ceremony, thanked the Catholic Church for establishing some of South Sudan's infrastructure, including hospitals and schools. The Catholic Church has been instrumental in constructing schools and health facilities all over South Sudan. The church has also opened a branch of the Catholic University system in Wau. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the human rights of mentally ill patients in South Sudan.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what are you looking forward to the most in the future?
I want to basically get money and a job, stable job, in the future. That's what I'm looking forward for. And basically money and a house, and just I want to be better off than I am right now.
I should maybe have a good job where I can be able to feed myself, my relative, and so forth.
To be at peace in the future, such that everybody can mind on his own business. They can just settle their families and also look about their personal hygiene and health.
My dream, which is to work with the UN. Yeah, it's been always my dream. And I know I will one day.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about the human rights of mentally ill patients in South Sudan. Incidents of jailing patients or keeping them in chains have been reported in South Sudan. But one psychiatrist in Juba says the problem is a symptom of a lack of resources for mentally ill people, as well as nationwide lack of education about mental illness. Ian Bior has more for VOA from Washington.
South Sudan is a signatory to the United Nations Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman, or Degrading Treatment or Punishment of All People in the country. The convention covers the rights of mentally ill patients and highlights the inherent dignity of the human person. Despite the recognition of the UN document, a number of mentally ill patients in South Sudan are often put in prison or chained up inside their homes by loved ones. Dr. Atung Ayualangara Cole says the lack of resources in South Sudan diminishes options for families who want to keep their mentally ill loved one out of harm's way. She says the issue of restraining loved ones is very complicated and controversial.
For me, to ask them not to restrain them or not to chain them, I have to have a better alternative for how to save the community, because at the end of the day, they pose some danger. It could be because of their illnesses, but the net result is they are dangerous to the community or to themselves.
Dr. Ayuel says those better alternatives include more hospitals, more trained professionals, and more government funding for facilities that care for the mentally ill. The country's infrastructure is not strong enough to provide more efficient and ethical options for the mentally ill. So as a result, families feel as though they have no choice but to chain a mentally ill loved one at home. Ayuel says confining mentally ill patients in this way can worsen their condition. She says she does not have estimates of the number of mentally ill patients who are in jails or are chained up by family members. But Dr. Ayuel says the practice is widespread.
It's like in a sort of keeping them so that they cannot hurt themselves. So we do have mental ill cases within the prison. We do have mental ill cases who are roaming the streets of the cities, mainly Juba. Those are moving naked. We do have those who are chained in the communities for years. And we have the famous story of a patient who had been chained since 1999. For no good reason, just because he's mental ill case. We have the outreach for those who are chained in homes so that we go per month, per cities, per house, trying to treat them and give them medicine.
Ayuel says much more work needs to be done to address the treatment of the mentally ill in South Sudan. She says getting more resources into the country should be a top priority.
We need to tackle the issue tactfully. They are not being chained, but again, they cannot be left roaming the street. So what we are doing here is we go to the community, we treat the case. When they start acting back themselves, then we ask them that now you can release the case and you don't have the right to chain them again. This is the medication. It's an illness that could be treated. You reach me at a particular place, then I provide the help. So it's I'm now providing help. When people learn that those people could be helped and could be treated, then we are going to talk about the so-called right of him not being chained.
Dr. Ayuel says educating communities about diseases and disorders of the mind is crucial to ending stigmas and diminishing the fear that communities might have about the mentally ill. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
Scientists say frequent drought, floods, and more powerful storms and rising sea levels are among the effects of climate change. But they say another result is more outbreaks of disease. British researchers have developed a computer model that predicts where this is likely to happen. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The research centers on zoonotic diseases, illnesses that originate in livestock, wildlife, or even insects. These carriers of disease are known as hosts. It's estimated 60% of emerging diseases are zoonotic. Ebola, HIV, and Zika are some well-known examples. But for the study, researchers focused on Lassa fever. It's a disease characterized by spontaneous internal and external bleeding that's passed from rats to humans. Researchers studied over 400 known outbreaks in West Africa from 1967 to 2012. Dr. David Redding of University College London is an ecologist and first author of the study.
I came into this project thinking about the hosts and where the hosts are found and how things like climate and land use change influence the host.
He says there are two broad groups of zoonotic diseases.
diseases that you can catch from, say, rats or primates or bats. You can get that disease by just contacting them. So rabies is a very well-known example where if you come in contact with an infected mammal, then you can contract the disease. But there are also diseases that require insects, blood-feeding insects, to transfer the virus or bacteria or other type of parasite from an infected animal to people or from people to people, but you still need that insect component for the disease to occur.
There are many types of zoonotic diseases that could pose a major health threat to humans.
Certainly in many tropical areas, you can meet lots of different types of zoonotic diseases that people won't have heard of. There's several different types of Lassa-type diseases, such as Mopea and Lujo. These are really obscure viruses that have only been caught by one or two people. Then there's the really well-known diseases, such as Ebola.
Computer models of epidemics among humans are not new, but Redding says they lack a key component.
For instance, to try and understand things like vaccinations and other treatments, how effective they're going to be, they can build these models of diseases within humans and do a really good job of capturing how people get the disease from each other and from the host. But very little effort really has been put into understanding the host and why it's found in certain places and not in others, and then linking to those really well-developed models of human disease. Linking those two bits of information hasn't really been done before.
The University College London researcher explains how the new computer model looks at disease outbreaks in relation to climate change.
Here we're thinking about sub-Saharan Africa, particularly around Nigeria and Ghana and that area of Africa. Some climate models predict a warmer and wetter environment. And in those conditions, animals that prefer warmer and wetter conditions will be more successful in reproducing, will have more food available, and will be able to spread to areas where before they were just not able to survive.
As a result, the model predicts the number of people in West Africa with Lassa fever will double from nearly 200,000 to more than 400,000 by 2070. The actual figure could be much higher, because many people do not get severe symptoms and could be misdiagnosed as having malaria. Researchers say the model of zoonotic disease transmission could be refined by considering whether it's easy for people to travel, how often they come in contact with others, and their poverty level. The study says the model would have been of value in the recent Ebola epidemic in West Africa and the current outbreak of Zika. The study was published in the June 13th edition of Methods in Ecology and Evolution. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Freedom of speech is a rare commodity in South Sudan. Rapper Lual Diawol is using his music to speak out against a government that has a reputation of silencing dissenting voices. Jason Patinkin has that story for VOA from Juba.
For South Sudanese rapper Lual Diawol, music can be an act of political defiance. He took the stage at this nightclub in Juba the day after soldiers stormed another venue to stop his performance. On another occasion, his fans had to smuggle him out the back to avoid arrest.
Hip-hop is a type of music where you talk, you pass messages and talk about the suffering of the people and be the voice of the voiceless, basically. And I feel like South Sudan, there's a lot of people who are voiceless. A lot of injustices, a lot of unfairness.
Lual is one of South Sudan's most popular rappers. Raised in the United States, Lual returned to what was then Southern Sudan in 2009 in hopes of helping the country grow. South Sudan got its independence 2 years later, but has known little besides war, poverty, and corruption since. Lual's lyrics push the boundaries of free speech in a country where perceived government critics have been jailed, beaten, or killed. The government banned one of Lual's most popular songs, called Dola Jadid, from playing on local radio stations. Dola Jadith means new nation in the local Arabic language. In it, Lual criticizes local officials who he says always reply, "We're a new nation," as an excuse for the lack of public services like water and electricity. Lual says he received death threats after releasing that song.
It's just people trying to rattle me, trying to scare me, and trying to get me to sing things that make no sense or talk about falseness and fake things that are not really happening, clubbing and what, but that's not the reality in South Sudan.
Lual says he won't give in to intimidation.
I just have to be myself. I can't change for any intimidation or any fear because you only live once and I cannot live like a coward.
With South Sudan emerging from a 2.5-year civil war that has divided the country by tribe, Lual says he wants to preach unity.
Music brings people together. And that's what we need right now, this time of peace and reconciliation. We need to unify and have that nationhood, that love for South Sudan, you know? Because we're all South Sudanese at the end of the day. Revolution, union, one union, giving us
copyright love, that's the only solution. All is that I'm cool with. He's working on a new album, collaborating with producers and singers from the country's various ethnicities. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. South Sudan's high court in Juba sentenced 16 former workers in President Salva Kiir's office to life in prison. They were found guilty of stealing more than $14 million from the president's office. Defense lawyer Baku Pitia called the judgment unfortunate and unfair and says the verdicts will be appealed. Presidential spokesman Atene Wekateni insists the court performed its duties correctly and that the 16 will remain behind bars during the appeals process. The United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, together with Save the Children, say they have reunited some 4,000 children with family members after being separated during the 2-year conflict. 7-year-old Nia Bitu Linjengdeng is the 4,000th South Sudanese child to be reunited with her family. She was flown on Saturday from Juba to her grandmother, who lives in the village of Kodak on the western bank of the White Nile in former Upper Nile State. Her grandmother says she couldn't believe her eyes when she saw her granddaughter again. And finally, the Catholic Diocese in Wau has opened a new children's hospital. Church and health officials in Wau say the facility has the capacity to admit hundreds of patients. The facility has 15 wards, each containing 10 beds. The $3 million project took nearly 2 years to complete. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with a remix of the song Vulundela by Brenda Fassi. We've been listening to Brenda Fassi with a remix of the song Vulundela, which means open the way. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.